You pick. Sandra and Carl.
Sunday, the 16th of May, 2004, at the Sunday Night Speakers Meeting of Narcotics Anonymous, welcome to our first speaker, Carl.
No.
I'm Sandra, an addict.
Hi, Sandra.
I want to thank Jim for asking me to come speak, so thanks. I have not been nervous about this meeting until, like, last night. And then today I've just been like, oh my God, I have no idea what. Anyways, because of that little thing. Anyways, I don't want to go too far back. I mean, we all know, like, we all went through the same thing. I just want to go, I want to talk a little bit about the feelings before I got clean and how I felt. And when I was growing up, I saw the addiction in my family from a very, very young age. My father was what they then said, you know, well, they still say, was an alcoholic, which I don't believe to be true. My father was an addict. I believe that it's all inclusive. This is the only place I come. This is the only place I need to come. My father tried to smoke catnip once to see what it would do to him. And when I think back about that, that tells me that he was an addict. So I saw the behavior. There was a lot of abuse, a lot of violence growing up. And I always felt out of place. I felt like nobody wanted me around. I felt like my house was the house on the block that all the other parents said, don't go near those people because they're crazy, or, you know, they're bad kids over there. You know, I always felt that way. And, you know, my brother was older than me. He was, you know, a product of abuse, and he was abusive. And there was a lot of violence and stuff like that in my family. I was sexually molested by my brother as I was growing up, which, you know, created a lot of confusion. It was, you know, it was like I just wanted to know that someone loved me. And when I got that attention, that's what I thought it was about. And so I carried that pattern out for quite a few years after that, for years and years actually, until I got clean. But those were the things I thought I needed to do to be loved. And in order to not feel the way I felt after I had to do those things, I got loaded. You know, and it just helped me not to have to feel and not to have to think about, you know, how come my life was so different? You know, I remember wandering around the streets just right before I got clean and, like, nowhere to go and someone else's shoes, sores all over my feet, sores all over my face, my hair all chopped up because I thought I was a beautician one day. And, and I remember walking around just thinking, how did I get here? And why is my life like this? Like, I had no clue. I had been to one Narcotics Anonymous meeting probably maybe 3 years before that particular time wandering the streets. And I went in there, and it was in Northern California, and actually this man that I bought drugs from actually took me there because he was trying to get clean. He's like, you gotta come. And I went with him, and there was this little, quaint little room, and it was in the back of, like, a sheriff's station. And I was like, okay, we're going to the sheriff's station. You know, it was a trip. And when I went in, everybody was, like, hugging, and I was like, okay, I don't know you, don't touch me. That's how I felt, you know. Of course, I didn't have a voice to where I could say that. I just felt that, and so I never went back. I did the geographicals, thinking that it was Southern California was the reason that I used, because I didn't know I had a problem. I moved to Northern California. Back up a little bit, before I moved to Northern California, when I was 16 years old, I met this man. And I thought he was going to change my life because, you know, it's always something outside of me that's going to fix me. And I ended up living with this man and marrying him by the time I was 19. When I got to a point where my life, you know, it didn't, I realized that didn't fix my life, but now I just had my problems and his problems. I decided I needed to leave Southern California, and that's when I went to Northern California. And I always think about this because, you know, it it reminds me of how much denial I was always in, that, you know, it wasn't me, it was always something outside of me that was making my life so miserable, or you know, the reason that my lights were getting shut off, it wasn't me, it was somebody outside of me or whatever. I remember telling my ex-husband, I'm going to Northern California to live with my grandmother, and I'm going to get my life together, and if you want to come, that's fine, but don't you embarrass me. Like I couldn't do that on my own, you know? And I always think about that because I'm good at messing things up. I don't need anybody, you know, to help me do that. And I remember saying that to him, and I just remember the look on his face, and he was like, and he went, and, you know, anyways, I didn't use for about a year after I moved there, but I still didn't know that I had a disease. I had no idea. I didn't have any idea. I just thought that's the way life was. And after about a year, I met people, and the whole cycle started over again. So I did another geographical, and you know, at that time, it must have been the fact that this man I was with must have been his problem. So I left him and came back down here. And when I left, right before I came back down here, you know, my mother had moved to Northern California. She kind of followed me up there. And my mother's disabled. She's legally blind. And I remember before she came there, she said, well, if I come up there, you're not going to leave again, are you? And I said, do you think I left Southern California because of you? And she said, well, I don't know. And I said, I'm not going to leave. And of course, she came there and I left, you know. But before I left, you know, I really destroyed that woman's life. I mean, her entire retirement, I destroyed it. And I'm very, very blessed to still have that woman in my life today. It's hard for me to talk about that because my mother's always been very, very caring. She just wanted me to be okay, and she didn't know how to make me okay, you know, so she just kept giving and giving, you know, she was such an enabler. So I learned how to be a good addict and a good enabler, so, you know, I got both kind of going with me. And so I came back down here and I told her, you know, that I was coming to get help. But I didn't know, when I was 12 years old, my mother put me in this place called College Hospital. And because she found out I was smoking marijuana. And I learned in that place that there was a lot of things I hadn't done yet. And immediately when I got out of there, I just did more. You know, I did cocaine that I had never tried before, and I did all that. But back then, something was planted because I knew there was somewhere that could help me, but I didn't know where. And I knew that I wasn't finding it in Northern California, so I came back down here, and I lived in my truck for a while until I just got so beat up by the disease that I was just like, I remember how desperate I was. And I was, you know, having to look at people that I grew up with, you know, and they were like, what's going on with you? You know, I was a mess. And nowhere to live, you know, just going from place to place, wherever somebody would let me be for a short amount of time. And, you know, the one thing that saved my life was I got arrested. You know, I got arrested for forgery, and it saved my life because it was right before I had got arrested when I first got back down to Southern California, I started calling these hotlines. I still hadn't found, I didn't really remember that Narcotics Anonymous was around. I just knew I needed off the streets. I needed someone to take my life from me because I couldn't handle it. And I had been calling these different recovery houses or 800 numbers, and this one place sent me like three different recovery houses, and I did these interviews, and one of them said, well, we won't have a bed for about 3 months. And I was like, okay. And I thought, that's a lot of time. I can go back out there. I still got 3 months to go, you know. And then they called me in like 2-3 weeks. And I was like, they're like, we got a bed. You got to be here tomorrow. I wasn't ready. You know? I was like, tomorrow? You know, and so I'm like, well, I don't have a driver's license. I don't have my security card. And they're like, look, do you want to come in here or what? You need to get that stuff and be here tomorrow. And that was so quick, I didn't go. So between that time and the time I finally went, I got arrested. And it was during that very short time that I spent in jail that I realized that I had a serious problem. And it's amazing the things I went through till I realized, you know. But I was like laying there, and I was like having pains in my stomach, and I was sweating, and I was freezing, and I was making noise, and this woman that was in the cell with me said, "Are you okay?" I'm like, "I don't know, I think I'm getting sick, you know," and she goes, "Do you do drugs?" And I'm like, "Yes." She goes, "You're coming down, you're picking," and I'm like, I didn't get it, you know, I had never not used long enough to know that I was going to withdraw, and it was amazing to me. And I remember when I finally got out of there, where my disease took me was I had nowhere to go, nobody wanted me around, the people who I thought were my friends had sold my car while I was in jail, and when I got out of jail and asked for a ride to go find my car that I thought was still mine, the girls that were up at the jail had bought my car. Oh. And these girls said, "I'll give you a ride," and I was like, "Oh, thank you, you know, and I was like, "I'll give you my little car," and we walked out to the parking lot, and there was my car. And I was like, "That is my car." And these were like three pretty big burly women, you know, and I was beat. It just trips me out when I think about it. When I think back about it, I just trip on that. So these girls drove me down to Downey, and they said, "We'll find this guy that supposedly sold them my car." And I was like, "You know what? Drop me off right there." They dropped me off at this motel, and the only thing I got from that car, and I have this, and I still have this today, and it's the one thing I have that followed me through my disease, is a picture of my father. Like, back up, when I was 9 years old, my father was beat to death in a drunken fight. And that was, I think, like the first point, well, not the first point, but the second point that I really, really withdrew, because even before my father died, I have those issues with my brother, but I always felt like I could go to him, you know, like I was safe with him, even though he didn't know. But when he died, I felt like I was really alone. And I had this picture of my father, and I still have it. And this picture kind of followed me around through until I got into that recovery house. And I know, like a lot of people might think that sounds crazy, but, you know, I really believe that the people that go before me that love me, they guide me today, you know. And it was that picture, going to get that picture, that got me the ride that I needed to get to the recovery house when I needed to be there. You know, and it was just like a fluke. I ran into somebody who said they'd help me. And I was like, "You will? You know, what do you want from me?" And he didn't want anything. You know, he just got me a room and fed me and said, "I'm going to help you." And I thought, "Oh, right, this guy's going to help me." And he did. And he didn't ask for anything. And it was going to get my father's picture that I ran into this person. And then he took me to the recovery house, and he just disappeared. And I was in that recovery house for 16 months. I was in-house, and then I did a year's live-out. And it was within that 16 months that I found Narcotics Anonymous. After I was in that recovery house 5 months, I went back out. I thought that if I cleaned the baseboards good enough, and if I made my bed tight enough, and if I rolled my socks the right way, that I was going to stay clean forever. At first. That's what I thought. And it didn't work. You know, that it didn't work. I went out and I used. And just like they say, your misery is right across the street, and you can be refunded at any time. I mean, I ended up with that same girl that sold my car at the same bar where my car was sold, walking across the street with the same cop that always arrested me, and I'm thinking, what the hell am I doing here? You know, how did I get back here? And I'm telling this girl that I'm getting high with about recovery and how great it is and all this stuff that I learned, and she said, "You know, maybe you need to go back there." And I thought, maybe I do, you know? And, you know, once again, my higher power intervened, and the recovery house contacted my mom and said, "Don't you help her. If you help her, she's going to die." And so she didn't. She didn't help me for the first time. She didn't help me. And I ended up going back. And when I was in that recovery house, I moved to the Venice program. And I was terrified to come back to L.A. because I still had it in my mind that it was a geographical thing. And if I lived in Los Angeles, I would get loaded, because that's where I got loaded. I forgot about Northern California. So I kept telling them, "I don't want to go to L.A., I don't want to go to L.A., you know, I'll get loaded, you don't understand." And they would laugh at me, and they would say, "You will not get loaded just because you go to Los Angeles." And I'm like, "Yes, I will." So finally they talked me into moving to the to the LA facility, and I was terrified. So I was trying to find anything that would help me stay clean. And I went to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting at Jocelyn Park on Thursday night. It was my first meeting. And I remember, it was amazing to me because not only did I think if I came to LA that I would use, but I thought if I didn't work for this recovery house for the rest of my life, I would use. Because that's what I saw. You know, I saw the counselors that worked there, they didn't do 12 steps in that program. They didn't do any type of fellowship like that. It was more attack therapy, synonym based, and I saw the people that stayed clean for a long time, they worked there. And I'm like, okay, please, you guys, give me a job, you know? So they did. They gave me a job. And I thought, okay, I'm going to stay clean. I got a job here now, you know? And then what happened was my counselor, who had 16 years clean, one day when I went into work, they handed me termination paperwork, and they said, go fill out this termination paperwork. And I was like, who's fired? And they told me who was fired. And this person, you know, I had put this person on a pedestal, like, wow, they got 16 years, they're never going to get loaded, and oh my God, they're a god. And I mean, I just believed that this person was like the god of all gods, you know. And I was devastated, you know. I couldn't understand how someone could stay clean for 16 years and then get loaded. I just thought it would, doesn't it ever go away, you know? And I remember filling out that paperwork, and I thought, this is not going to keep me clean. You know, and by then I had gotten a sponsor, and I was halfway starting to work some steps because, you know, I was around here, and I wanted you guys to know I had a sponsor. I was like you. I had a sponsor, you know, so everybody would like me. And then I thought, you know what, I need to use this sponsor, and I really started going to her women's meetings. She has women's meetings every other week at her house. And I started going to that, and I really started connecting with the women, and that is when my life changed. I mean, I was clean, but I wasn't really growing until then. I wasn't, I was just kind of staying stagnant, you know. I was just not using, and I was going to work and making sure my little socks were folded right and, you know, all that. And I started using my sponsor, and I started calling her, and I started reaching out to the women, and that was really hard for me. Really hard for me, because I don't know how it is for men when you come in here, but for me as a woman, it was very difficult, and I've heard the same story from other women. You know, and I sponsor women now that tell me, I don't want to talk to women, and I'm like, you know what, those women are going to save your ass. I remember being in the car with, there's a man in this program that used to come pick me up, and he would take me to meetings, and I used to think, what does this guy want? You know, and he didn't want anything. He wanted me to stay clean. And one day he picked me up, and there was another girl in his car. And she was, like, at the same place in recovery that I was. And we were like, whatever, women, whatever, you know. And he said, you guys should get each other's phone number. And she goes, I hate women. I'm like, me too. You know? And I see her today, and we just laugh because, you know, it's so different today. Like, I can't imagine my life without women in it. I just can't. You know, I've been through a lot since I've been clean. And I talked a little bit about how I feel about people that pass on. And just recently, well, in November, it still feels recent, my grandmother passed away. And it was really, really hard for me. Still is sometimes. She was like that woman that, she was the one that didn't take my crap, you know, when I was getting loaded. She was like, nope, you are not destroying my life. I love you. Get the hell out of my house, you know, and she did not take my crap, but she was there for me when I got clean. This program helped me walk through that. You know, when my grandmother passed away, I thought I was going to get loaded. Before she passed away, she was sick for quite some time, and I told my sponsor, and I was like, my husband and I would talk about it, and, you know, I was scared, because I didn't know, all I could relate those possible pending feelings that I had no clue what they were going to feel like clinging to was, you know, when my grandfather died, because I was loaded, and I just kept getting loaded. So, yeah, I cried, but I don't think I really felt anything. And so I was terrified because I know when my grandfather passed away, I got even worse. I just used more because of the guilt behind not being there. And I didn't have that guilt this time. Because of this program, I was able to be there for that woman, you know. And, you know, I was able to send her things every once in a while, even though she was in Northern California, just to let her know that I loved her and she was special to me. And I brought her to a meeting and she gave me my six-year cake, her and my mom and my sponsor gave me my six-year cake. And that was the most special cake I've ever taken in my life. And she was the cutest thing, you know, she sat in the meeting and while people were trying to share, she was like kind of disruptive. You know, she's like 4'2" and she's like, I love everybody. And I'm grandma, you know, and she loved this fellowship. She loved it because, you know, it gave her back me. It gave her back my uncle who disappeared for 20 years and, you know, was a heroin addict and he was back in her life, you know, and, you know, and I know she's there with me still, you know. She's just another angel there that guides me today, you know. And I talk to her. And that's part of my spirituality today. And that's part of, you know, she's part of my higher power. And it's still hard sometimes to trip. When Mother's Day came, I kind of... It's really weird because I love my mother to death, but my grandmother was very, very, very special to me. And, I don't know, I kind of just breezed by Mother's Day, you know, I kind of sent some flowers and just breezed by it, and then I thought about it a few days later, what was my mom going through, you know, and that's when I realized that my disease is still very, very alive because it's not all about me, and, my disease tells me that it is all about me, and, you know, so I have to, like, really put more effort into that area of my life, and, what else? I don't know what else really to say. My life is good today. I can walk through anything, and I know I can. I've seen people before me walk through everything. You know, I work with other women in recovery, and it's such a blessing for me to have them in my life. But I often get frustrated because I get really frustrated when I see people that don't want, when they don't want to put the effort in. Because, that's the only way to reap the rewards. That's the only way. And I know because how I feel when I don't put the effort in. When I don't put the effort into my recovery, I start feeling, maybe I don't belong here, maybe I don't belong there, maybe I'm not that good at my job. You know, maybe I start, all this disease starts coming into my life, and when I'm putting effort into my recovery, I feel like I deserve, you know, like I deserve to live a good life. Not like I deserve like a, you know, like I'm special or something, but I feel like I'm a deserving person. I deserve to live a good life. I was with a couple of other addicts the other night, and I really realized something that that the blessing that I don't have in my life that I never realized that I didn't have. And then I was with these other couple of people. They kept bringing up the names of people in the rooms. And they're like, so-and-so this and so-and-so that. And I'm like, I don't even know who that is. I don't even know who that is. And it was really bothering me. And I was like, and I have a recovery sister, actually, that really works very, very hard at not on her character defects. And she doesn't gossip. And I always tease her. And I go, oh, you're just a good little girl. You know, I always tease her. And I realized that this weekend that I don't either. And I was like, what a blessing. Like, I don't have to go home and say, so-and-so was there and they said this, or, oh my God, did you see what so-and-so was wearing? But I would have done that, you know, 8 years ago. Or probably 4 years ago. You know, maybe three, I don't know. I don't know when it stopped. I don't know when it stopped, but you know what, it wasn't okay. Because everybody's here for the same thing. And I'm telling you, if I was, what I was thinking was, oh my God, what do they say when I'm not there? You know, and I don't want to be that kind of person. I don't want someone to think, what is she going to say about me when I'm not there? Because I'm not, you know, and it was really a blessing when my husband and I left and I was, you know, asking him, was that kind of weird, you know, and he was like, whatever. But, you know, I'm really blessed that I don't have to be that kind of person today and that I can try to love others for who they are. Okay. You know, I'm blessed today. My life is so good. And I wouldn't have it without these rooms. If you're new or if you're not new and you think that you don't need these rooms, I suggest you think about why you're here right now and why you first came here, because that's like really huge for me. When I think that I don't need to go to a meeting, or I don't need as many meetings in my life, because maybe I'm better now. Maybe I could have a drink on the weekends or whatever. I need to remember my last day. And that's what I tried to do, is I try to remember that last day and the way I felt and where my life was. And I go, okay, maybe I better get up and go to a meeting, you know, because I don't want to go back there. I would not trade the little problems I had in my life today for the chaos and the madness and the ugliness that I had before. And I want to thank you again for asking me to share. And, you know, just stay. If you're here tonight, just stay. Thank you.